Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
The Last Kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kids series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We are live on Crowdcast. We're live on YouTube. You might be listening later on the old podcastatoriums that are online. Could be Apple Podcastatorium, Spotify Podcastatorium. This is a real word. Lay off me, you guys, okay?
Yeah. Listen. The comments are lighting up with people being like, Alex, that's not what it's called.
But we have a great packed show for you tonight. But before we get into it, we should probably talk about... All our favorites are back. As we talk about every week, though, Brett Macris, Stray Bullet. Yes. Okay. Should I just pause there for you to say that, Pete? Or do you like the interrupting?
I do like the interruption.
What do you think?
I could answer that question.
Yeah.
So he has been curating a different drink for us every week. Sometimes it's been from the Gotham City cocktail book. Sometimes it's just been from fan favorites, from the Patreon Slack, from his brain, from the internet, wherever. But this time,
this guy's a chef.
Very exciting. He's an actual chef.
Anyway.
Yeah. He designed a drink for the show this time. Which is very cool.
He's a bar chef.
Yes. So here, I'm going to bring up the recipe here on the live videocast. So it's called Behold the Vision. I have to assume it is, well, partially it's with ingredients that we've all bought over the past couple of months to make these cocktails.
Yes.
But also to tie into Doctor Strange 2 is coming out. I don't know if Vision is in it, but Scarlet Witch is, and she went through some stuff with WandaVision, so it makes sense. But if you're listening, this is Mezcal, Saint Germain, Campari, dry white vermouth or vermouth blanc, and use 3 dashes of Pink House Alchemy smoldered bitters, which are phenomenal. They're these amazing spicy bitters. They're so good. And muddled basil leaves. And the instructions is, after you put everything together, you sip and wonder if your life is real, your kids are real, and if Wanda can really just make people up.
Wow.
So great recipe. That's what I do in a bar anytime.
True. Exactly.
That drink looks amazing. I didn't have any mezcal, so I guarantee you I will buy these ingredients and make this bev within the week. My wife's going out of town for 6 weeks, and I'm going to be solo parenting. And you're going to see me, I think, did I say this last week? You're going to see me literally fall apart over the course of the next
That's going to be fun.
Well, if you have this drink, you'll feel a lot better. I did make it because I did have the ingredients around. It's great. It's like... you know, you got a little bit of the smoke going on. It tastes a little bit like the Negroni. It's lighter. You got the basil on the back. Really good stuff.
You got the basil on the back, says Alex.
Stop.
Okay.
For those listening, I'm doing the coolest moves you've ever seen. If you're only listening to the audio podcast. Yeah, it was really amazing. It was like something out of Step Up to the Streets.
Yeah, you used to really be into devil sticks, right, Alex? Really big into the devil sticks situation.
People would come by Union Square Park to see me. do that.
Okay, cool. Are you an alien?
Union Square
Park. He lives in New York?
I don't know. I certainly couldn't think of any
Union
parks.
Square Park. You live in New York.
I was like, can't say Central Park. I can't say Central Park. Let me come up with literally. Oh, no, I can't think of any parks right now. Okay.
Where am I? Oh, I'm hanging out at The Bean in Chicago. And it's a park.
Come find me on the Golden Gate Bridge here in San Francisco.
Who are you lying to? Who are you trying to convince, Alex? Where are you? Alex,
do you know who I'm trying to convince? I'm trying to convince our first guests here on the show. They are the creator of a new book called The Panic, which is out, I believe, today from Comixology. Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, Neil Clyde and Andrea Moody. Hello,
this.
Neil. Good to see
Neil,
you. Always good to see you.
What a flex backdrop you have behind
you. His own personal arcade back there.
So last time I had one, and this time I have to show.
Oh, here you go.
So every time there's going to be a new machine.
All right.
That is awesome.
And Andrea, welcome. Where are your arcade machines? I don't see any.
Thank you so much. No arcade to me.
He sent them here. He sent them here. So.
Yeah, of course.
So let's talk about The Panic. This book is pretty terrifying, as you can tell from the title. But literal nightmare scenario. I know I was joking about not knowing anything about New York, but the rough idea of the book is there's this train crash or explosion or something happens. There's still some mysteries about that. People are trapped, and then we follow different timelines after that and also during that. And it legitimately is like one of my number one New York nightmares. Yeah. Neil, I know you talk about it in the back matter a little bit, but where did this idea come from?
So before I dig into that, I just like to point out that all five of us have beards, and I think that's amazing. So,
yeah.
Pandemic life, you know what I mean?
Once you go beard, it's hard to go back to the old aging baby face.
I agree.
Yeah.
So where did this come from? So it came from a couple of different places. So, I mean, I, like many people that we know, was living in Manhattan around 9/11. And after the Trump Towers fell, there was a lot of, I mean, the city was shut down. The city was sort of locked down for those of us who were in the city. And there was a lot of this, like, wandering around, wondering what to do. Everyone just kind of reacting to this just tragedy that happened. And I was hearing stories of people that had been trapped in the subways, like as the towers were falling, not knowing what was going on, just being told by the dispatcher or whoever's, you know, the drivers were, that something was happening and they were delayed and they found out later. And so for me, that was kind of the impetus, this kind of what happens if you're in the middle of something, a disaster, a tragedy, and you don't know what it is. And how do you react to it, right? And how do you react to this fear, this unknown? You know, I have friends who were victims of suicide bombings in Jerusalem. And, you know, I've talked to them afterwards, and they've told me, like, just at the time, you have no idea what's happening. You're reacting, and you're hoping that the people around you are going to help you, and you're going to help them. You know, we've been talking recently because a couple weeks ago there was a shooting on the subway in Brooklyn, and people have been asking me, like, you know, how knowing what happened and what you learned from that, what does that do to your book? Like, you know, how does it relate to your book? And so Andrea and I have been basically saying that what happened a couple weeks ago in Brooklyn, that's the way we're hoping kind of humanity reacts, right? New Yorkers coming together to help one another. People pulled each other into different cards, doctors jumping in to help. Our story is sort of the other end, the cautionary tale of what happens if that doesn't happen, right? Right. We as humans are very divided right now. I'm sure today a lot of people have seen that the last couple of years. As humans, and, you know, especially in America, there are a lot of political, racial, sexual, cultural divisions. Mm-hmm. And what I really wanted to explore in the story was, how does a divided America come together when the lights go off? What happens when we just have to say, hey, you know what, we're humans and we need to work together to survive? Can we put aside all the shit? Can we put aside everything that defines us, Democrat, Republican, liberal, conservative? Can we put, you know, put color, race, religion, can we put all that aside to really work together to stay alive? And that was really the impetus for the book.
It's great. I think you really capture what you're saying, that moment of pure chaos where something's happening, but you don't know what, and how people react in that moment and do what you're saying, the old Watchmen gambit of like, we need something big enough that scares everyone into being nice to each other.
Yeah.
And it's real.
Thank you. I mean, it's definitely, like I said, you know, the inciting sort of inspiration was definitely post-9/11. I wrote this thing originally almost 20 years ago, and it has evolved over the last two decades. And it started off as a novel, and then it turned into a comic book. And as it has evolved, and as editors have touched it, as, you know, myself and everyone who's kind of helped sort of add pieces and parts to how we brought it into life, the story has evolved as well. You know, it's endured so much over the last two decades, so much political nonsense, so much cultural nonsense. And it really, hopefully, we hope, Andrea and I hope that it really comes out in the comic.
Yeah, it definitely feels very present, like you're saying. I mean, just to mention for those who are interested in picking it up, I mean, we can see even here on the cover, somebody's wearing masks, but some people are wearing masks on the subway. Some people are not wearing masks on the subway. There's MAGA hats that people are wearing. There's a whole discussion about that. So there's a lot of stuff that feels very present and current there. Andrea, though, to turn it over to you, what was your biggest task in terms of crafting the look and the world of the book?
So, the story seems at the beginning a normal, classic, crazy story about a bunch of people, different people, and they have to try to help each other in a real situation. I mean, could happen to us, for example. There's nothing incredible. Could happen. And the point was where the action take place, because we are underground, beneath the ground, in a subway, in a train, so the environment is not really sexy. I mean, okay, that's it. Very dark, very with cold lights.
As a New Yorker, I'm deeply offended by that take.
Exactly. But that's the point. I love this kind of situation. So my point was to move in a direction where the black could be alive and using some colors, like very pop sometimes, and in the same time, not description colors, but like a feeling colors, to put the readers in the same feeling, the same approach, a lot of mindful, as our characters are doing or thinking or acting in some ways. So sometimes you can see totally off color. I mean, it's not that real, but in the same time, they're talking to you. I mean, the colors are a good part because it's very vibing, the high vibe, and very natural with stains, with watercolors, and I try to move the water inside the colors, and using maybe 4 or 5 palette and not much. But I really like the approach, and issue by issue, you see, the sign, the ink's gonna be nervous and nervous and nervous. Like the moment at the beginning, every single step beneath something, like falling in the dark, and the fighting of the characters, the good moment, the right moments, the bad moments. So something really with something current with the situation. Not only, okay, I have to do color, yellow, blue. No, something more detailed. Yeah.
Well, and I love what you're saying, because I think you're saying like the subway is a confined space. It's not a beautiful space. But exactly. You do such a great job in the book of coming at it from different angles. So we're seeing different, like the backs of characters' heads and shadow. You create sort of a whole environment, a whole world around this really confined space that everyone's trapped in.
What's the point?
When I first started working on this, I was really nervous because I was worried, like, how are we going to create a story that basically takes place in the dark? How are we going to have, are we going to have 5 issues of just like black panels? And which to some people is amazing. Some artists love that. But what Andrea has been amazing about is he's been taking color and making color a character in the ensemble.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Color really plays a part in setting your tone and setting, and also paired with each of the characters in the actual ensemble, you really understand what they're feeling at any given point, even when all the lights go off. And I think that is what really has made this a successful book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, Neil, I did want to ask you, or maybe this is a question for Andrea as well, but there's obviously been a lot of discussion about Comixology and the changes that have happened physically with the platform. I'm sure those were in the works for a while. I don't know if they were in the works when you started doing the book for them, without biting the hand that feeds you or anything like that. I'm just curious, how are you making sure that it's still a good reading experience given the changes to Comixology and how they're executing the comics online?
Do you want to take that? Or okay. You know, we really kind of approached it as a comic, right? We approached this as any comic that I would create, any graphic novel that I would create. And it's really about, there's a lot of page turns, and we didn't really spend a ton of time on focusing on how it really fit the platform at first, because mm-hmm. I think that when you're creating a book for a digital device, there's definitely, you can see it like with Webtoons and Tapas, there's definitely a way to create a comic that fits that experience. We really approached it, the two of us, I believe, as, you know, we're going to create a comic the traditional way. And what Comixology has been really amazing with, you know, the folks there, the production folks, they've been really kind of guiding us into their guided view, right? Basically saying, hey, when you're creating a book, when you're creating this book, just be careful about these few things. You know, double page spreads don't really work on a guided view. When you're lettering, and thankfully, I lettered the book, make sure that the lettering doesn't cut across panels or, you know, fits in a way that we can kind of move from panel to panel when somebody's viewing it on their device. So as I was doing sort of like the design and production of it, I really was trying to keep their not restrictions, their guidelines sort of in mind to create it. And they've been, like I said, they've been fantastic about taking the amazing artwork and, you know, the pages that we ended up with and really making sure that it works within their experience.
That's cool. Yeah. I mean, it does, it's not like it, they're trying to restrict you with their rules. It's just like, hey, this is how we do it. And it's not like a punishment. I feel like the book, and we obviously didn't read it in that same capacity, it works any which way. So
yeah,
like,
you know, look, I'm a product designer. I design apps and websites for a living, right? And when you're designing an app and a website and you come up with all these crazy bells and whistles and ideas, you're really have to kind of work hand in hand with your development team, right? Your developers basically say, hey, we know that you want this thing to kind of explode every 5 minutes, but here's the technical constraint in making that happen. And yeah. So I think it's the same thing. I think it's basically Comixology just working with a creative team and saying, you guys can do what you want, but if you want this to work really well on both experiences, both in the Comixology app as well as the eventual print that we're going to be doing with Dark Horse, cool. This is kind of the way we recommend that you create it. And yeah. I don't think it's something that's, and Andrea, I can't speak for you, but I didn't feel hampered by it at all. I just felt mm-hmm. like, all right, these are the guidelines in which we need to play, and we won't do a double page spread, and we'll letter it this way, and we'll kind of create
yeah.
it.
The Sistine yeah. Chapel was like, Michelangelo, let's keep it to the ceiling, bro. Like, yeah, on yeah, the wall. Yeah. We're just doing the roof, buddy.
And he brought in, you know, pans and pots to put on the floor, and he was fine.
Yeah, see? Yeah. That's fine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, the pun was still the story. Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah.
The Sistine Chapel, the original guided view.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I went there, they gave me a guided view of the Sistine Chapel. Yes.
I had to zoom and click on the ceiling.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, as you mentioned, this is going to be published down the road. Is it September when it's coming out as a collected edition to Dark Horse? Is that correct? Well,
I think November.
November, the pool. Yes.
November 7th. But obviously, the world being what it is, you never know what there's going to be supply chain issues. The date we're given right now is November. The book is going to be amazing. We're really excited to have it out in the world, both as issues, both as a collected edition. And hopefully enough people will pre-order and support it that we can do more. You know, that's
yeah. Yeah. It's not only beautiful, but it's intense. It's a hell of a story. And Keith, I'd rather read it than experience it, for sure.
You are also beautiful and intense, just so you know.
Oh, that's exactly
right. Back at you, buddy.
Now, Pete, as if I may ask you a question, you don't live in New York anymore.
That's
Did
right.
this take you back to any sort of subway
it was
anxiety?
Like, I was like, as soon as I started reading this, I was like, man, I don't miss this at all. I'm on an adorable little trolley. I don't have to worry about any of that kind of stuff.
Wow. Yeah, do you think
are you going to do the land of make believe with Mr. Rogers?
That's right.
Are you going to do a sequel to this set in Philadelphia, where every people are trapped in a trolley outside?
Yes, yeah, so every single one in San Francisco. It's on the trolley in San Francisco. So.
Yeah.
Perfect. Detroit, it's all in the cars. It's all.
It'll be like the Speed 2 cruise control of sequels. So I'm really looking forward to it. So without getting into too much of the spoilers, just because the book did just come out today, what potentially can people expect over the course of the rest of the run? What can you tease about the book?
So it's definitely a really tight, intimate psychological drama. It's about the people. It's about the survivors, right? I like to tell people it's The Walking Dead without the zombies, right? So it's about... Yeah. Really this group that has to come together and survive something horrific without knowing what that horrific thing is. But while they're trying to get out of this situation, other horrific things happen to them, right? I've never really been alone under the Hudson River walking, you know, from New Jersey to New York. But this is sort of my worst case scenario of what that might be like. And there's some real surprises along the way. And what's great about it is that it's really kind of open, and we do have more volumes planned down the road, but obviously, like I said, that depends on pre-orders and sales, but there's definitely a larger event that's happening that we're hoping to get to.
I would say there's a lot of surprises. I mean, there's a guy named Pete you just throw off the subway for no reason, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, come on!
Based on you, so that's fine.
Yeah, there you go. You guys had an altercation back in the day where you threw Pete physically off. Yeah.
It was hard getting those doors open, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what the movie Throw Mama
off the train.
Yeah, that's what the movie Throw Mama from the Train was based on, except it was about Pete.
Right.
And
Pete. Yeah.
I don't know where I'm going with
the
that.
The original Mama.
Neil, Andrea, thank you so much for coming on. The book is awesome. Everybody should go check it out. Appreciate it. Looking forward to whatever terrifying things happen in the next couple of issues.
Thanks for checking it
out. Thank you. Thank you for having us. All right. Thank you.
Have a good night, guys.
You too.
A pleasure. Get back to your X-Men, Neil.
Totally.
Yeah.
All right. There we go. Once again, the book is called The Panic. It is out now from Comixology Original, so you can get it on that platform there.
I mean, we should just say...
Yeah.
Just before we move on, I mean, you got to be Nightcrawler, right? When you're going to play the X-Men game, you know, the old arcade version. I mean, Nightcrawler was the best one to use.
Nightcrawler was cool, but I'm more of a, I mean, Cyclops, shouts to Neil, who plays the game on a daily basis. But Colossus is the one. Am I right?
Really? I used to, maybe I'm thinking of a different one, but I used to do the Sentinel. Always, because that seemed crazy overpowered.
Of course, you're the Sentinel.
What?
I like hunting mutants. I like hunting mutants.
That's the whole point of it.
That's the Cyclops move is to say I'm the Sentinel.
Unbelievable.
The Sentinel is great. The Sentinel is totally overpowered. I'm terrible at these fighting games. The fact that I could stand there and be like missile.
Straight bullets, right. That's Capcom versus X-Men. This is the original X-Men game it was just like, it was like Turtles in Time. You just run around a very limited area and fight random people that jump in and are like,
Oh, okay. Well, what did you play in Capcom versus X-Men then while we're bringing this up?
Well, I would always go Wolverine and the Hulk and then Spider-Man. Those were my three. Yeah.
Kevin asked if you would play, if I would play Cypher, and I did, but the way you played Cypher is you go in the back and rewire the machine.
Yeah. Playing Cypher in that game is not playing it and sitting at home reading a book.
Reading the comic books, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
But before we move on, this side conversation, this book is fantastic, The Panic. Def, check it out on Comixology Originals.
Absolutely. Why don't we bring in our next two guests as soon as I can find them in this platform here. They are two of the writers for The Fox Family Values, which is coming out from Archie Comics. They also have a slew of other projects we're going to be able to talk about. Dean Hashbiel in the stream. Hello, Dean. How are you? And Vito DeSante here as well.
Hey.
We got everybody here.
So great to see you guys. It worked.
We did it. Let's talk about the Fox Family Values, which is coming back to Archie Comics. So tell us about the book. What is different in the world of the Fox this time? And I believe You two didn't directly work together. You wrote two different stories, right? Or did I get that totally wrong?
Right.
Okay.
That's right. But we were tasked with the same mission, which was to make comics better in a Fox one shot. And Vito had to do it in 5 pages, and I was tasked to do it in 12 pages.
Oh, wow.
Including an Alex.
Which makes me the genius.
Makes you the genius because you did it in 5. That's right. That's right.
It's like name that tune.
3-part structure,
who,
5 pages.
Do it in 3 pages.
I know, right? Name that tune.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was a really difficult thing because we were asked by Archie to make comics better and alter the industry in this effort. And I think we pulled it off. What do you think, Vito?
I think we come out in 2 weeks, and I think it's probably going to be the Mayan end of the world
after
the book comes out, because what's the point? What's the point after that?
That's right.
Alex Toth is in our book.
That's right.
Woo-hoo. That's incredible. So, I mean, how does that feel? Because both of you have worked in comics for so long, knowing that you're releasing a book that is going to end comics, that has to be a little bit of a conflict inside of your heart, right?
Yeah, but it, somebody had to do it.
Go out on top.
Go out on top. Yeah, exactly.
No, but in all seriousness, I haven't worked on the Fox in a little while because I was working on the Red Hook for about 5 years, including some other little gigs here and there. And so it was really cool to revisit the character. And I thought about, well, what's going on with these folks now, right? But more importantly, since there hasn't been a Fox comic in about 4 or 5 years or however long it's been, I was like, well, this also needs to serve as an introduction for new readers, right? So I was trying to honor what I had done in 10 issues with Mark Waid writing some of the best dialogue in comics. And he's also a phenomenal writer, but to be able to collaborate with him. And then when I found out that Vito was writing a Fox story, I was like, oh my God, of course. He's awesome. Vito should be writing the Fox as well, you know? Great. So, I pitched 2 story ideas, and Jamie Lee Rotanti, who's the editor, picked one of them. And then I wrote a 12-page story. It's pretty tight. There's a lot going on in 12 pages. I know that, when I was growing up reading comics, you pick up an issue of like Marvel 2-in-1 starring the Thing, and you got an epic story in like 22 pages. You know, now those 22 pages, as we've discussed over the years, has become 6 issues. Right.
Yeah.
With, you know, certain nuances, expanding on scenes, whatnot. But I kind of went back to that old school style of like really packing it in, but also trying to tell something that means something. And it not only entertains, but, you know, has a heart, you know, possibly even educates a little bit.
I mean, I think there's something too, like making comics better is going back to that style where it is a little bit more of a punch in the face when you read a book in a good way, where it's like you get so much at once, even if in those Marvel 2-in-1, some of the last couple of pages, you see the panels getting smaller and smaller.
Yes.
And it's just like, and the Thing was fine. Oh, is that the end? Okay.
For those who don't know the Fox, though, who aren't familiar with the character, could you give like a capsule summary of the idea of what makes this character special?
Well, Vito, let's hear your voice.
There you go.
Thanks, Vito.
Killing it.
The reality is, you know, we can talk about the history of the Fox, you know, from the Golden Age to now. I don't think any of that really matters. I think Dean is probably, I'll put it to you this way. When I did my story, I pitched a couple of different stories, you know, 2 or 3. And, the one that ended up getting picked actually was changed. It was the Fox and another guest star. And they're like, well, you know, we're trying to keep guest stars out of it. Can we just keep it to the, you know, like the central cast? And then what I had to do was I had to go back to what Dean had done. And it all became about a family. And, you know, I'll let Dean expound on that a little bit more. But realistically, I didn't have anything to work from, or I didn't have to work on anything from anything else that wasn't, you know, the Fox Hunt or, you know, Freak Magnet or anything like that. So really what Dean and Mark established in there in the two volumes that came before this were really all I needed to do. So for anybody that's listening, watching, that will read the book, you don't really have to go into the minutiae of, you know, anything that the DC Impact line did, anything that came in the 70s with like Rich Buckler or anything like that. Or even, you know, going back to when Irwin Hasen created a character back in the 40s. Like, you can really just go to your store, pick up these two last two volumes, and you'll be caught up, you know, like immediately. But, you know, you know this character better than I think any of us do.
Well, I think it, to pick up where you left off, Vito, like, the comic book that made me want to dedicate my life to making comic books was the Fantastic Four, which is a family book, right? And I feel like a lot of young kids, you know, when they picked up a comic book back when we were picking up comics early on, like, that was a kind of an escape, right? You would go and you either want to be a superhero, Spider-Man, Batman, but there was something about the Fantastic Four and that group value, which I think permeates this family values one shot, right? Like, your story, Vito, deals with a certain kind of commitment that's going to happen. My story, I realized, well, if the Fox is a freak magnet, well, maybe it's a family curse of freak magnets. Yeah. And, you know, there's the wife and the son, including our main hero, this dude who's kind of a reluctant hero. And how do they all deal with the fact that they've been cursed by this freak magnet situation, right? Like, things get drawn to them whether you like it or not. You know, villains are going to pop out of nowhere and come at you. So each character, the three main heroes, deal with that concept very differently. And again, I wanted to show that off, to set that new premise in this one shot. So, and also, Vito, you write about family and Stray. Your creator-owned comic is a kind of a family book, yeah. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I think, you know, we're kidding around about saying, you know, making comics better and stuff, but I think universal themes will always be applicable to just about every situation in every comic book, any kind of story. So family's universal. We can probably write 3 years worth of Fox stories just based on family, you know, and like the way the son interacts with the mother, the way the mother interacts with the father, the way, you know, like, it's kind of like an overflowing fountain and well of like source material. Like, you never run out of stories about family, you know, because, you know, by and large, we all have a form of family, whether it be by birth, by blood, or by choice with your friends, you know? So it's a very, it'll never run dry.
You know what's funny about that? It's like
dynamic.
It's an evergreen topic, right? But what's funny is like, if I was a kid, right, or like, I would be like, initially I'd be like, it's about family. I don't want to read a comic book about, you know, like, that's a point, right? Like, but like the Avengers is a family, you know, the characters I created in the Red Hook are these misfits that kind of become a family, right?
Well, I was going to say, jumping on what you're saying about accessibility, I feel like, yeah, a kid might not be like, I want to read a book about family. I want to see superpowers. But by the end of it, they're like, oh, I know a guy like the Human Torch. He's crazy.
That's right.
And I think like that's the real core of comics and like accessibility. When I was a kid, you know, I would go to like the gas station and there had a spinner rack there. And like, I had no other access to stories like this. And I was like, this is a gold mine. And obviously it's different now and there's almost too much access to it. But I think comics still has that unique thing of giving you sort of the in you, the sexy in, the dazzle, razzle dazzle in, and then the real in, which is the family you're talking about.
Well, really, I mean, like, what's great about superhero comics is that it's all genres put together. It's romance, it's crime, it's science fiction. It's how you use it, right? And then the way you relate to it is through human connection, you know? Yeah. And that kid that you knew that reminded you of Human Torch, I mean, he went to jail for burning your friends, right?
Exactly. How'd you know? I mean,
so that's what happened, right?
Wow.
And that's what we learned. You can't burn your friends, right? Mm-hmm.
So allegedly.
That's why we have comics. That's allegedly. Why we have comics.
We have comics. You get to burn your friends through a fantasy.
By the way, this is a little bit of a side note, but I was watching Pete's face while you were talking, doing that little monologue there, Justin, and he was completely stone-faced up until you mentioned spinner racks, and then he was like, ooh.
Just saying spinner rack works now.
Very fun. Oh, I do want to ask you, you guys mentioned a couple of other projects that you're working on. Vito, you have Stray, which I believe is coming back.
What can I tease about it? It's going to be a 7-issue story that we're doing exclusively on Kickstarter. When we do put out the collection, Action Lab will put out the collection with a secret 8th issue. So what I wanted to do is I wanted to kind of make it special for the people that have backed the book and who have supported the book, but also I wanted to give retailers a reason to care about the book. I've always found it weird about Kickstarter that we were always expecting people to kind of double dip, like back it on Kickstarter, but then also buy it at the comic book store level. So if I'm going to, you know, ask you to buy a book more than once, I really want you to get something like more bang for your buck. So this series is called, I don't know why we didn't do this earlier, but like it just made sense, you know. But what this series kind of involves is basically, it's called Requiem, and it's a mass for the dead is what a Requiem is. And Stray is going to have to go through his own born again type storyline where he gets everything taken away from him and what's left. Like in the first mini, we explored, what does this hero want to be? Does he want to be the same type of hero he was? Does he want to be a replacement for his father, or does he want to be something different? In the second one, we just looked at his history a little bit in the Rottweiler years, just to see how he became who he is now and what those choices did to inform the hero that he is today. So as a result, now we're taking everything that you saw in the first two volumes and throwing everything at him and saying, okay, well, you've made your choice, you've made your bed, now you're going to have to lie in it, and you might not like where you end up. So
Vito,
I don't know if Vito knows this, but I'm going to be writing the next Stray story, and it's called Give a Dog a Bone.
Wow, that's huge announcement right
it's
here
adult.
On the show.
It's an adult version. We're going to like expand to the back of the comic book store.
That's really high on the spinner rack. You got to really reach.
Way up there.
Very high.
Yeah. Now, I will say you snuck us a copy of this book, and it is harrowing. Like, it is really rough to read. Like, it's good, but it's really tough to read. So I think that last page will
kill you.
You do such a great job. Doing glossy superhero storytelling, and then you have like an emotional, hard emotional fit at the end that gets you.
Yeah, it's and it goes back to what we were talking about with the fox and everything. And it's like Dean was saying, human connection is just about everything. Like in storytelling, I tend to look at superheroes as American mythology, and myths were created to explain thunder and to explain why the sun rose in one side of the world and went in the other side. So we can use superheroes to tell stories about loss and about dealing with, Spider-Man is a very good example about a guy trying to make, we don't, as kids, when we read Spider-Man, we didn't see that. We just, went straight for, well, he's putting the vulture in the face. Like, why is this old man flying in the, but he had to hustle and he had to make money and he had to take care of his aunt. And those are the things that, as we got older, we really latched onto. With Stray, I've always wanted Stray to reflect the world around me, like in 2022. And I always wanted Stray to be somewhat autobiographical, but then be a little fantastic, you know, like to be something bigger than just my life, you know, like, because once you do that, you get people to relate, you know, the character to their lives. So, yeah. You know, it has to be personal at some point, but it also has to be relatable. And I don't think, with all the Stray stuff that I've written thus far, I don't think anything's been as personal as this, since the first one. So, I'm very happy with, Marcello's artwork, with, all that we have. Become a creator like now, because we have so many avenues, Kickstarter, Indiegogo, Comixology, you know, we have all these different avenues, and we do get a chance to tell these stories kind of unrestricted, or we put our own restrictions on them, if necessary. But what a great time to be alive, man.
Yeah.
And sorry, we're going to end it all in 2 weeks, though.
I know. So, wow. Yeah. Really intense. Speaking of relatability and mythology, I want to ask Dean, like, how you explain the myth of why I end up at Sonny's in Red Hook every, like, once a month drinking. Is there any sort of relationship?
Well, this is some niche content right here.
But... Well, I mean, not to get too deep
this
into it,
but this is inside,
like,
baseball.
It is. We've known you guys for years. I've bumped into Dean at Brooklyn Social on Smith Street, like truly probably 10 years ago at this point, and had like a long talk. There were other comic people there. I can't remember who, but remember talking to you. And Vito, I feel like you used to work at Jim Hanley's Universe, like truly so long ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember seeing you
for
there talking comics.
11
with
years.
I shot a web series, like truly. Almost 15 years ago now in Hanley's, and
that's,
I think,
right.
We were there the night we were shooting. So, like, there is huge relatability mythology here. But Red
and
Hook,
Justin, I don't know if you know this, but you, me, and Pete have been doing a podcast for a while too.
That doesn't ring a bell. If it's not in a comic, I have a hard time understanding.
All right.
And to be fair, we've been trapped in a podcast underneath the Hudson River for 18 years.
But if I was to cast Sam Brosia, who plays the Red Hook. Justin, do you act, right? You've done
no, something. Classically trained.
Classically trained.
I can see it, man. I can see
Let
it.
No.
All right.
I'm
Get
here.
On
I'm
that. Right Get now. On that. I like it.
Oh my God.
Well, let's talk about the Red Hook since you brought that up. So that is running on the Webtoon platform, which to be honest, is something we should cover more here on the show and don't, because it's so huge. It's enormous. Yeah. I think, like, the people who spend a lot of time talking about, oh, I have issues with comics, they're always talking about DC and Marvel, and they don't realize Webtoon eclipses all of that exponentially. What is it like, though, working for that platform, creating things for that platform? Because it is such a different experience.
It is a different experience, and I used to think it wasn't a different audience, but it absolutely is a different audience, you know? Like, in fact, I don't think superheroes do as well on these platforms. They do better in print and in graphic novels and in cinema, frankly. I think that the metric is that there's more fans for, like, romance, soap opera stuff, you know, manga style, a little bit more like that, you know? And I'm kind of like the old man that showed up and was doing my, like, 1960s superhero pastiche, right? But in modern terms, there's alcohol here, right? There's drinking happening.
I'm here for it.
Oh, look, there's a version of
there's
Justin.
Me. There's me too.
But the format is interesting because, you know, the creepiest thing I can say to people is when they ask me what I do, I said, I'm in your pocket right now. You can read my comics for free because everyone has a phone, right?
Yeah.
So we're creating these right things now to be scrolled through. And don't forget, I was a creator and co-founder of Activate, which was a free web comics collective that started on LiveJournal, the blogging platform, in 2006. So I was kind of ahead of the curve a little bit, you know, knowing that people were going to be more online as we are. And trying to figure out the best way to present online, you know, and deliver these comics. And I started off doing it free. And frankly, this is free too, except I got a deal where I get paid to own something that you can read for free, you know? The problem I've discovered, though, if I can be frank a little bit, is that when it's free and it's online, you're competing not with people's money, but with their time. Yeah. You know, we're on social media all day long. You read some news things, then maybe you're watching your TV now on your laptop these days. Like, you'll get to the comics later, you know. And yes, there are some comics that blow up and have like 5 million readers a week, you know. That's not me, you know. A lot of my readers are still hopefully looking for me at the comic shop. And luckily, you know, I have Webtoon, but then I've had also Image Comics publish the first two volumes in print, you know.
Yeah.
But then I took a little step back because I realized I want to maybe collect all this into an omnibus at some point soon. But I did have to think about how whenever I drew a page of Red Hook Comics, I was kind of in my head laying it out twice. I was laying it out for the virtues of the vertical scroll comic, you know, on your phone at Webtoon. But then also, how would it look in print eventually? Because I still love exploiting the real estate of the blank page that we're all so used to, you know? And how would I make that work? And so it's like almost like every time I drew a page, I was thinking of it two different ways. And trust me, there is a huge difference in pacing and the way the story is delivered between what we're looking at right now as a vertical scroll versus the print edition. And eventually, my heart is in print, although I've made a lot of hay doing webcomics, you know, since 2006.
Yeah. I mean, you brought up the pacing. That's the big thing for me. And to be perfectly honest, I'd say, like, maybe this is me being old, but it's definitely me being old. Just yeah. went. Yeah. Thank you, Pete. You're the young one on the podcast. The trying to read Webtoon is difficult for me because it's really a retraining of the brain, particularly not to get too floofy about it, but in terms of like Scott McCloud talking about the blank space, the white space, like how you skip
the
time between the panels.
The
yeah, exactly. Right? Like it's hard for me to pace it out the same way when I'm reading something on the vertical page, or even like we were talking about earlier with Comixology. I mean, it seems like same you have the same. Yeah.
Well, same thing happened to me with reading. Remember when like Akira came out and I think it was like, was that the late 80s, early 90s, but it came out and it was paced like left to right hand page comic. Right. Then later on you find out, oh no, all Japanese comics are done the opposite way. Right. Mm-hmm. And then recently, the last decade or two, maybe two decades, I'm showing my age, most manga that is published back to front. And I don't know how to read that way.
Yeah.
I have a tough time.
I was going to say, like, it's funny how many different formats there are that we have to kind of retrain ourselves to read a certain way. Speaking of Comixology, I remember the first time I accidentally got onto Guided View, and it was so jarring because comics are not just about the panel, it's about the page. So whenever you read it, you absorb the whole thing, but you're also going step by step by step. So with Webtoons, you know, because you're scrolling, I can't remember, there was another one that was scrolling too, not Tapas, but another one. But it's so anti, you know, everything that we've learned from day one, you know, like, and I mean, maybe it's because, you know, we're products of the American school system and we do read left to right. But, you know, like everything else, like if you're down to try, you're down to learn. You know, I've never had any problem. When I did Purple Heart with Ricardo Venancio on Webtoon, we almost ignored all those conventions and just did it for the print. And what we would get as the only criticism really was, this one's too short. This chapter's too short. This one, you know, because the chapter, if I had a six panel page, that's only six, you know, like panels going up.
Bing, bing, bing. Like
whereas, that, yeah. You know, like there, all the other ones are, you know, much longer, much broader. they're made for the format, less so for print. So, you know, the more successful ones, Lore Olympus, which, you know, book that thick, you can imagine how many panels are in each chapter, because like as it prints, it's literally a phone book. So, you know, like it's such a learning curve as a creator that I don't know that I know, because I didn't get a second season, I didn't ever got a chance to explore what that would be. But, you know, at the same time, I love that we didn't get a second season, because everybody's still reading it and freaking out over the cliffhanger ending.
But we hope to do more Purple Heart. We've talked about that. But the thing that I learned
all the time
that was a little jarring as well was like, I could draw an inset panel, just like a close-up of an eye, or I could draw a splash page with all this stuff happening, and it looks the same on your phone. It's the same real estate on your phone. So you have to start thinking like, geez, Louise, what am I doing here, right? Like, and
I think it shows in your Red Hook, the one we saw, that like there's an inherent pacing to it that I think is the sort of adaptability you have to find, where it's like, you could be – like comics, I think we're talking about the different ways we read them. We're trained to read them the same way, American comics. But I also think we all go back and reread or look at panels differently. We all have our unique way of going through.
Right.
And the phone makes it like, nope, you're all going to go this way. And you can go up a little bit and down, but it's all about direction.
So like in your print comic, your traditional print comic, the reveal is you turn the page and then it's on the left side. Usually that's what you try to pace. So you get two pages and then maybe a reveal, or you're asking a question or a little mini cliffhanger per page to get to the next page. Right. In Webtoon or in the vertical scroll comic, it's at the bottom. It's at the bottom.
Yeah.
You're pulling up, you know, and it's down at the bottom, and that's pretty crazy. But you know, at the end of the day, it's an interesting challenge. And like I said, I tried to do my best. And the dirty little secret is, and this is what I did at Activate with Billy Dogma back in the day, was my restriction was squares. I just kept everything a square. It was a close-up, a vista. It was inside a box. And that's what I did. You know, and that was the click view, you know, kind of thing. And I'll say this, Justin or Alex and Pete, I don't know if you guys write plays or not. I've written a bunch of plays and screenplays and stuff. But I feel like the Webtoon format is great for play, you know, for dialogue, for lots of talking, you know?
So. Right, it moves that aggressive. I mean, you're talking about like writing a screenplay or even reading a screenplay. There's a visual component to it, because it's like dialogue, action, dialogue. You're spacing it out almost like a comic. And like, all vertical. It's all like the flow of that. So
it is. Totally, and it's graduating. You graduate down, right? And what's interesting about the vertical scroll versus print is that I was lettering inside the panels, but in the vertical scroll, you can do outside the panel and have a long tail, because again, you're kind of controlling a pace. So you're not whipping by, you know?
Cool. Interesting.
Yeah, I think the audience for Webtoons actually enjoys reading. And that's sometimes not so conducive to what comics are, because comics are both, you know, they're both the visual and they're the literature, a part of it. Jim Hanley's universe, where art and literature meet. That's, you know, kind of what their slogan was for years. And it's true. You know, that's what comics are. They're art and literature. And I find that the Webtoon audience is probably more, and maybe it's because it's an international audience that are trying to find, going back to everything else we said, universal themes. They're going to kind of gravitate more towards reading than in looking at something. And maybe, like Justin, like you were saying, going back to it to look at the visuals later.
Yeah. Right.
Hey, Dean, I wanted to ask you, just because you brought it up, you are bringing Billy Dogma back for the Image Comics 30th anniversary anthology collection. What has it been like revisiting this?
It's funny, because like, I forgot how to draw him and Jane legit. I was like, wait, I haven't drawn this like kind of like, you know, bastardized version of Popeye or whatever the hell I created, you know, in 1995. And he's kind of slimmed down. Like, I don't know. I turned 55 at the end of May, and I've only gotten heavier, but something about keeping your hero a certain age, even though you want him to get a little older with you and a little more grizzled. But I don't know. I was taking more care of him. You know, maybe I take care of Billy Dogman. He can take care of me. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway,
that's like your version of Love and Rockets.
I was gonna say he's your Dorian Gray, really.
Yeah. See, yeah. It's like a drawing in an ice bucket.
He's your Luba.
That's right, my Luba. But yeah, it was really. I had written the story that I drew for Image. I wrote that about almost a decade ago. Oh, and wow. I just hadn't had the time to figure out how to draw it or when to draw it. And when I spoke to Eric Stevenson, I was like, hey, I'd love to be a part of the anthology, the anniversary, 30th anniversary of Image Comics. But I don't have like 12 one-page stories. I have a 12-page story, right? Which is why if you pick up the first issue, nothing's really happening yet, you know, with Billy Dogma. And then little by small, it's just going to be another little, you know, dip into this thing. Altogether, it'll make more sense, obviously.
Well, you're the closer of the book. You're the huh?
And
you're
I'm the closer. That's right. That's right.
It's exciting.
So, and I think that's a good thing.
That's good. Yeah. You get coffee. Yeah, yeah. Coffee's for closers.
That's right, baby. and so it may feel a little unsatisfying per issue, but trust me, collected together, I feel is like kind of a classic Dean Haspiel weird romance story, you know, that has a lot of heart. So,
well, and I will say you let us get a look at the full.
Oh, that's right. I sent it to
together.
You.
And I'll tell you what, I was like, even though it's a story, it's an action story, there's a lot going on. I was like, I feel this romance sort of deep in my bones a little bit in a weird way. Like, I don't know if it, I'm like, it hit something in me where I'm like, I feel like I've been in this relationship, oddly. And
again, the human connection. Thank you for that. Thanks for reacting that way. Because it's also a little weird. The story is funky, you know, as I do, right? But I think I found some stuff that, like, I don't even necessarily totally explain, but it's what you bring to it. Because what I try to add to comics is what prose does really well. And when you're reading prose, you can't help but be the co-author. Because you're filling in the room, the couch, whether it's space. I don't care how well it's explained. You're imagining a lot, so you're the co-author. Same thing I was trying to do with this story and trying to do in my future comics is I'll hand you some stuff, but I want you the takeaway to be yours, you know, what you add to it. Nice. So I feel like I left some stuff out so that you could and then it makes it more your story, you know, and there's more ownership in that way, right?
Yeah, it works. It hit me.
Make our story.
It's our story. That's right.
Speaking of our story, the Fox Family Values comes out this month, right? Is there a date for it or is it still?
Is it the?
I believe it's May 18th.
May 18th.
Yeah, okay. Wednesday.
Right. It's 2 weeks from tomorrow.
Yeah.
All right. So not next week, but the week 18th. After.
Yep. Awesome. Well, I can't wait to check it out. Very exciting. Congratulations, guys. Thank you so much
for coming. Thank you. Great seeing you.
Love you guys. Always great to see you. Dean, I'll see you at Sunny's. Just let me know which days you're there. big pandemic spot for me. So shouts to
I feel
that.
You. I'll see you there. All right, guys. Thanks.
Thank you, guys.
Take care. Good night. All right. Oop, there we go. Okay, once again, that was Vito De Sante and Dean Haspiel, and the book is The Fox Family Values. The other things that we mentioned are Stray Requiem is going to come out to Kickstarter, I believe. Also, the Red Hook PTSD is now on Webtoon. And Billy Dogma, you can check out in the Image Comics 30th Anniversary Collection. So lots of stuff going on there. And speaking of lots of stuff, let's go on to more stuff. My favorite section, because you guys
Let's
make
do
it up.
More stuff.
More
it's
is more.
Your audience more question.
Content. All right.
And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question and ask a question over here on Crowncast or in the comments on YouTube. Now, we talked about this week's drink of the week, but what are you guys drinking, Pete? What are you, coughing a little bit before the show. What's going on?
Well, I just wanted to, I made a couple too strong. But I'm just glad we made it past that segment because, like, the way you were eyeballing Vito's, like, open neck, like, unbuttoned all the way down, and the way you were just kind of, like, holding yours, being like,
My buttons?
Yeah, I was just glad that you made it through that. Cause
clutching my buttons.
You were just, like, staring it down, just like, look at the way you're
biting my lip, biting my bottom lip.
You're in a cotton prison, Alex. You got to open up the buttons, release the beast.
I feel you, Vito.
Nobody wants to see this.
No,
we all want to see
that button. Keep that button.
You want me to?
No.
Those buttons go all the way down, right?
I don't know if these buttons come off, actually.
Yes, yeah.
Come off. You've never unbuttoned them.
I've never taken off this shirt, man.
You know how the buttons work?
He was born with that shirt on. Keep it on.
And I'm down with it.
It's like your car keys. It's but for a shirt is what buttons are.
Yeah, all right. I don't get what you're talking about, but I appreciate it. Pete, what are you drinking?
Oh, I'm drinking a little vodka. And let's see here. And a little peach pear. A little peach pear mix.
Peach pear, no
mix. No follow-up questions.
A little peach juice in there. A hobo from a community theater production. That's just the way you're always just like, I'm drinking vodka in a tin can. What are we singing about?
Got some fresh peaches in here.
Yeah. Well, I'm the hobo who lives in the park. Don't walk up into me when it's after dark.
Oh, man, that's a great song.
Justin, looks like you've switched over to something else. What are you drinking?
I went from a Manhattan to, let's keep it on trend, a little Deschutes. I'm running low.
Oh, man, you love the Deschutes.
I save it special for the show.
Nice. All right, why don't we get to some questions? We got one here on YouTube. This is from Stanley. What are your plans for watching Doctor Strange? Do you think the MCU has lost its focus and momentum? Whoa! Coming in hot with a question here.
One movie and everything's questioned?
Wow. What is this movie expected to do? $150, $200 million this weekend? Something like this?
I don't know.
So
man.
There is that.
I think the movies have not lost their momentum. They've expanded out a lot, and we'll see if they can sort of hold on to it, keep the story on the track. Excuse me, when it's going so big. Marvel Television, I think we've talked about, it feels like it's not a loss of momentum. It sort of feels like it's in a little bit of a track, and I'm hoping we get more of a breakout from that track. But I think the movies are going strong, and I think I'm going to see Doctor Strange on Thursday afternoon. I'm going to see it early, which never happens for old JT.
Afternoon.
Yeah, I think for me personally, I don't know. I've reached like my limit is the wrong word, but it's definitely like it's a lot. It's a lot of Marvel. There's a lot of Marvel going on constantly. I'm still seeing all of it, but I am at the point now.
Oh,
where
what
it
a
doesn't...
hero!
I know.
Wow. How dare you put yourself through that?
No, all I'm saying, and I have talked to other people who feel this way as well, is there's a point where it's like, it doesn't feel like this is special, exciting present anymore. It's more like, here's the Marvel thing that's happening this week. But at the same time, everybody's watching the stuff on Disney Plus. Everybody's going to see the movies. So it doesn't matter. Like, there still is that momentum there. It's just more frequent, and they know that. The question is, like, is it going to get to a point where people are actually going to be worn out and the diehards are going to be worn out? And I don't think we're there yet, you know?
No. I mean, it could be worse. We could be Star Wars.
Yes, that's maybe lost a little bit of momentum, just like a scotch, just a tiny bit,
just a touch of moment.
Yes, Pete, I know you're all in. You're all in. You're like Marvel all the time. Give me more Marvel. 45 episodes of Moon Knight tomorrow. Let's do this. Right?
Yeah, I mean, it's an exciting time to be alive. That you know, in some aspects, you know, it's never been a better time to be a nerd. In the fact that there's so much out there, there's so many shows, there's so many. I mean, if you would have told little me that, like, dude, you're getting a Moon Knight fucking live action TV show that's going
to
be bananas.
Pete, what if I find a way to time travel and I run up to you in Rochester?
First off, dude,
mouthful of garbage plate, mouthful of garbage plate. And I run up to Pete. I went up to Peach at age six, and I'm like, Pete, you're going to get a Moon Knight, and then I vanish. What do you think your reaction is to that? Are you like, perfect, with your little tiny six-year-old beard?
I'm gonna be like, who is that stranger, and why was he so close to a child? That seems unreasonable.
I then travel back in time right after Justin travels back in time, and I'm like, just to clarify, you're gonna get Moon Knight, but also there's a nonstop pandemic, upcoming climate disaster with the end of the world, and women are having their rights taken away. See you later.
Oh, what do you think about that? It's the, you know, classic thing about life is you get some things, and then a ton of things are taken away.
I gotta be honest, I feel like 6-year old Pete would be like, Moon Knight!
Oh, come on.
I gotta say, Alex, if you're traveling back to deliver that message,
to Pete, like, hey,
a bummer now.
I have one chance to time travel. I'm gonna go back to 6-year-old Pete and let him know.
Yeah. Be like, buy KN95s. It's like, sorry.
Buy KN95s.
Isn't there something I could have done, time traveler?
Literally anything else. All right, why don't we go to some questions here on Crowdcasts from Stray Bullet. Oh, this ties into what we were just talking about. Now that the pandemic is completely gone, 100%, no doubt about it, and we're all going back to the movies, live shows, has anyone started going back to the comic shop on the regular? That was mostly digital pre-pandemic, but I've always felt a little bad about it. What do you guys think? Have you gone back to the old comic book shop? Pete, you've been frequenting them.
You've
occasionally
been frequenting. You wow. Freak.
Pete, you're a fucking freak. What are you doing, you freak?
I've been trying to go to different comic shops for sure around the area. I do miss my Midtown Comics, man. I do miss, you know, being there every Wednesday in a giant line of people, which now seems insane, but yeah, and yelling at people who weren't obeying the line on the floor. You know, those were the good old days.
The craziest thing for me is, like, I would go back to the comic book shop, but I don't ever go to Manhattan anymore. I used to be in Manhattan every day for working, audition, job, whatever I was doing. I was in Manhattan doing something. And now I'm never, ever there. So I haven't been able to really – I think I've been to Midtown like twice recently, but I will go back there because I need that. My stacks are just the old stacks. I don't have new stacks.
Yeah, I've been going to the main reason that I've been going to comic book shops. I've been going to Galaxy Comics in Brooklyn when we've been talking about older stuff on the stack. I always try to go there first to try to support a local comic book store, and they're usually on my way when I'm picking up my son from school or something like that. It's just relatively convenient. But yeah, same sort of thing. I'm not in Manhattan anymore, other than occasionally one day a week. So there's no real reason to go to Midtown or anything like that. But I do love it.
I thought for a second you were just going to say that you were so busy you just like go to a place in Brooklyn and just like throw your money in the door and just kind of close it. Like, I don't have time.
Yeah, it's a Subway sandwich shop, but you know, they get the idea.
Yeah, got to support your local Subway sandwich shop.
Exactly. But yeah, it's still mostly digital, honestly. I mean, we'll see if that changes at some point soon. But
I'm getting roasted in the comments by Neil, Clyde, and Luana Nana about Brooklyn not having comic book shops. And I'm like, yes, I know. They have comic
books. Aren't you right by Anywhere Comics as well? Which is one of the best shops in Brooklyn?
Not directly by... but it is near. Yikes.
I wish I could tug the collar on the shirt, but the buttons are so tight. Otherwise, I'd do a classic hot collar.
Do your fun bit.
Yeah. Do we need to go over to the comments first?
Yes, we need to jump to the comments because we got a big one. Stray Bullet, but did the cat get it? Big update, kid. Pete's Pretty Kitty, which is the official name of your cat, right?
Yeah.
Did she get her 6 p.m. treat?
Oh, shit. I forgot.
Oh, no. Oh, man.
Oh, I'm in trouble.
You got to go puff that fluff, man.
Puff that fluff. We want to do it. All right. She saved
me. Love that we're hearing news about what's going on in Pete's cat household. Live in the comments thread. That was close.
When we started the show back 15 years ago, we started it to try to get news about Pete's cat, and that's finally panning out.
While you're saying that, the idea that when we started the show, we're like, let's do some fun comedy about comics, and now we're like, Pete, did you feed your cat at 6 a.m. Matt, talk about going back in time and telling people what's up. Let's go back in time and tell the younger selves, look at your future, you psychopaths.
This is on YouTube. Nelson Martinez says, have you guys seen the movie and or read the comics of The Bad Guys? If not, what's the last animated film you've watched? My son loves The Bad Guys books. everybody else in my family went to see it. One of the rare times I was in the city at work in the office, and they enjoyed it. They thought it was pretty good. It's definitely very different than the books, apparently. But last animated film I've watched, oh my gosh, that definitely is not correct, but Mitchell's Versus the Machines, maybe?
Yes.
I don't know. That was pretty good.
Heard about Turning Red?
Oh, Turning Red. Yes. That was great.
Oh, wow. Anyone Comics is actually near me, and I've never been there.
Wow! Zalvin just changed your life.
You're going to
love it in there, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm going to go there. I'm going to take my kids there.
Just leave them there. You can pick them up at the end when they're just before they close.
They'll take care of it. You'll come back, and they'll be in bins and bagged and bordered, and it'll be like...
I love you, my kids. Professionally graded, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Near mint. Pretty good.
Pretty good.
As a parent. Yeah, Turning Red is probably the most recent, but I've watched a lot of animated films sort of on repeat. Pete, but that reminds me, Pete, did you check out the Usagi series?
Oh, well, that's the thing. I was very, very excited for that. And then I watched it, and it's kind of like a kid's show where it's very different from the comics. It does reference the comics, which I was there for and really loved. But the story of a kid who really doesn't know what he's doing yet is not kind of the same story. So I watched like the first step, and I was just like, oh, man, this really is it's a different take, and I'm happy for like maybe a wider audience or younger kids that'll kind of like maybe look up the comic, but unfortunately not made for me.
Well, this is too bad. This is awkward. We thought you were going to be more excited about it. We actually have, and this is a big surprise, we have Stan Sakai, the creator of Usagi Yojimbo here.
Don't you do that.
And I guess he's going to come in to tell you how disappointed he is in you. Okay, here we go. Here's Stan Sakai.
Hello.
Let's have him do trivia instead.
Oh, all right. Okay, we'll go off to trivia. Don't worry about it. All right, we got one more question here. This is from Kevin. Do you have a favorite comic character who only ever appeared in a single arc, six issues or fewer, and who would play them in a
movie? That's...
Fuck, Kevin. That's a deep cut, bro.
Fewer. How do you even... A, how do we think of it? B, how do you remember that?
I mean, I'll throw one out at you. I've mentioned this before on the show, but this is a comic book that just really stuck with me. There was this Spider-Man issue where he met a kid who was being abused by his dad. And the kid, I think, got hit with some ray or something like that. But he got disintegration powers in his hands. And I can still, right now, picture in my head what happens when his father goes to hit him. He puts up his hand, and his father hits his hand, and it disintegrates his dad as he's going through his hand. And it was so raw and traumatizing when I read it that the kid goes on the run. Spider-Man needs to help him, talk about him. I feel like it was this one shot to talk about child abuse was what it was. And that affected me so much as a kid. I don't know that I necessarily would want to see that live action, but that's definitely a character that, like, one issue. I think he came back. Somebody brought him back for another, like, one shot or two shot or something 15 or 20 years later. But that character stuck with me. I don't know who would play him necessarily, but it was good stuff.
Yeah, all the characters that, like, I was like, oh, my God, these are cool, eventually got their own deals and started to be more and more into stuff. So, unfortunately, I don't have that deep cut kind of like, oh, this one thing that no one's discovered yet.
I'm going to throw out the Mist from the first Starman arc. There's the old The Mist, the sort of the Starman, original Starman's villain. His son takes over at the same time that David Knight takes over as Starman. And those two characters, David Knight appeared later in the series, but those two characters were only alive in that time. In the first six issues, and seeing them sort of in another element, another way would be cool.
Yeah. All right. Good answers. And that is it for your audience questions. And now it is time for trivia. And for that, we're going to turn over to Pete LePage.
All right. This is the time where we normally give back to the lovely audience, but Zelbs.
Yeah.
Before we move into this real quick, I just had a thought while we were playing this. It's like, now we're turned to Pete LePage, and then the music gets like dangerous. It's like the music gets like an alarm is going off, as if the show's saying, don't turn it over to Pete LePage. This is the first time I really heard the music telling us.
Whatever you do, don't turn it over to Pete LePage. So normally we give away a $25 gift card to Midtown Comics. Instead, bringing in an audience member this week, we're going to have me and Justin are going to compete for trivia. I have a good feeling about us winning. And instead of doing a Midtown Comics gift card, we're actually going to donate to abortion funds. There is a link that I'm going to read now. It's secure.actblue.com/donate/fundabortionnow. And what it does is it takes your donation and splits it between 80 plus different local places that are abortion funds that are helping people out, versus like a big organization like Planned Parenthood or something like that, which obviously are great, but the local places are the ones that really need your help right now.
It's a great spot to donate if you're feeling frustrated in this news moment, because it sort of does a lot of things.
Yes. So we're actually going to double our donation as well. Normally we do $25. I'm going to double it. We're going to do $50 to the abortion fund. Let's see if Pete wins and we don't donate, or we win. See what happens. I don't know.
Are we competing with each other, Alex?
That's right.
I have a good feeling about this, but we'll see what happens.
There's no hints.
All right, take it away. Take it away, Pete.
All right, here we go. Today's trivia is on topical comic news and a small nod to the legend Neil Adams, R.I.P. All right, here we go. Please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go, Alex and Justin.
Okay.
Question number one. Green Lantern is said to be leveling up with the blank. Is it?
Power ring. Green ring. The ring
up.
He has. He has
shut
a
up.
Ring.
I'm going to
name ring,
the
I think.
Things.
I think it's the
I'm
ring.
I'm going to name
Oh, it's multiple then, choice?
Yeah, Jesus.
Oh, Eliza Dushku.
Good.
Just ruined the whole thing. Okay, is it A, the Godstorm, B, Angel Rain, or is it C, Larry Hama? So leveling up with, is it A, the Godstorm, B, Angel Rain, or C, Larry Hama?
I'm gonna say Godstorm. Do you think Godstorm, Justin?
The cold angel rain. That was the original November rain. There,
yeah,
right?
Like the angel rain.
Ooh, beautiful.
Thank you.
Don't angel rain. Them. That was.
Don't
voice.
Encourage them.
I'm gonna go with Godstorm.
You are correct.
Yes.
All right.
I noticed no clues happening.
Yeah, no clues. But you see what I did there? God Storm, Angel Rain. Okay, anyway, here we go.
Yeah, you know,
question number two. What character is back and getting a giant size X-Men special?
Man. Giant size. Big man. Tall guy. Big old hands. Is it big old hands? Foot.
Eliza Dushku.
Stop. I'm going to give you the options and then you select.
We don't know how this works. This is our first time doing this.
Okay, so it's either A, Pike, B, Thunderbird, or C, J. Scott Pike?
Pike?
Why is Pike in it twice? I'm going to go ahead and say it's a non-Pike answer.
Yeah.
You're gonna go
Thunderbird?
With
is Thunderbird?
Yep. Thunderbird is correct.
How did two Pikes sneak into this?
Yeah. All right, here we go. Last one. What new Batman title is dropping May 24th? Is
Batman,
it?
Detective Batman.
Would you please
the
stop?
Batman's on the sky.
Would you please stop?
A story about the Bat signal where we find out how it's plugged in.
It's a
Eliza Douche Comics.
Oh my God.
Ooh, I love that.
I don't Thank like you. This bit and I can't wait for it to be over. Okay, here we go. Is it A, Batman Fortress, B, Batman Faso, or C, Franco Beso? So it's either
Batman Faso?
Face O? Like O face?
Face-O, yeah.
Batman. I'm going to go with the first one.
I'm going to go with Neil's answer from the comments. Batman Queso. Batman has a night at home and Alfred and he make a sweet cheese dip.
May 24th, check out Batman Fortress.
Wow. Incredible. Well, great news. I think we won, so we are going to donate to this abortion fund. To get it, secure.actblue.com/donate/fundabortion now. And like Justin said, it's a good way to, it's not going to solve everything, but at least it's going to help some local abortion funds.
Yeah. If you're feeling at a loss for what to do, as I was doom scrolling through Twitter over and over again and occasionally crying at stuff, this is a way to feel like you've actually accomplished something. Just yes. The way I felt after I pitched that Batman Bat Signal story, where we finally get the story of the light bulbs.
Oh, man. Where does Commissioner Gordon get those enormous light bulbs, you know?
The electric bill's high? Are they offsetting their carbon?
In case you guys were wondering about the third answers to the question, it's the 1988 comedy Death to the Pee-wee Squad.
And who is this a tribute to?
Neil Adams.
Neil Adams. Okay.
That's why there was a lot of Batman stuff.
Gotcha. Okay, great.
Shouts.
Good stuff. As we all know, comic books come out all the time. A bunch of them are coming out this week. Pete, what are you looking forward to?
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm looking forward to Giant Size X-Men Thunderbird number one. I haven't been enjoying X-Men, but this one I enjoyed very much. As well as Flashpoint number one.
Flashpoint really? Beyond number yeah, one. Interesting.
That's right. I'm surprised to hear you say that, Pete.
That's right.
That's right.
You can't put me in a box, dude. I like different things.
Yeah, I would never keep you in a box. I would put you in a box, but I don't think you'd stay.
That's right.
I'm going to give it up for, a couple things. Batman Killing Time number 3 by Tom King is super fun.
As soon as
fun.
You said that, Stray Bullet typed that in, and it was kind of creepy.
Big reveal, I'm Stray Bullet.
What?
Pretty crazy, right? And I want to also throw it out to Frontiersman Lockup Special number 1.
Whoa.
Book from Image Comics. We had, I think, Patrick Kindlin, the writer on our show a while back. And this is, I feel like this is a great thing going on in Image right now is some titles that are really not just doing a one-off story. They're doing like a full universe of things that are happening, but it really gets into real issues that they want to talk about. And this Frontiersman is about a sort of hero who got old, all the Justice League type heroes got older. And in a recent issue, he killed the villain that was attacking him. And this is about sort of the repercussions of that. And then it gets into a whole additional superhero sort of sci-fi story that happens as a result and the justice issues surrounding that. It was a great read. I did not, I didn't know I was going to enjoy it until after I read it.
I'll give a shout out to Twig number 1 from Image Comics. This is by Scotty Young. And Scotty Young has been creating some really interesting, weird, fascinating stuff. Yeah. So, excited to check that out. However it is, I guess we'll see. And all of these titles are going to be in the Stack podcast.
What? What are the odds?
I know that comes out every Wednesday at 9 a.m., both in the Comic Book Club feed and its own dedicated Stack feed. And folks, that is it for this week's show. I want to thank all of our amazing guests for being on the show. Thank you to Neil Clyde and Andrea Moody. Check out The Panic from Comixology Originals, that is up now. Also, Vito Del Sante and Dean Hashbeal for The Fox. Family Values, also from Vito. Check out Stray from Dean Hashbeal. Check out The Red Hook, PTSD, and Billy Dogma in the Image Comics 30th Anniversary Anthology that is going out right now.
Great guests on the show. Great books from all of them. Please check out all of those ones we talked about.
Absolutely. Next week on the show, Ibrahim Mustafa is going to be here to talk about his new book, Retroactive. Also, Serena Sanchez is going to be here to talk about Black Rhapsody. A couple of other podcasts to plug from us. The Doom Room. Our Doom Patrol podcast is live.
The Doom Room!
New episodes every single week. And also, if you want all 34 episodes, you can get them right now on our Patreon. Riverdale After Dark, our Riverdale podcast, is weekly. After that show airs on Sundays. Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast, is going to be talking about the Moon Knight finale tomorrow, as well as many other things coming up. We'll be back very soon with that. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support this show and all the shows we do. Apple Podcasts, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow. At Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram, comicbookclublive.com. for this podcast and many more. Until next time, good night.
Good night, folks.
Take care of yourself.
Feed your cats.